Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. The bags are right there at the register. And the special between now and Tuesday, Busch and Busch Light 30-pack cans, just $15.99. And don't forget, of course, the pickle bar is indeed second to none, led by the barrels and the dills. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Stock up for the weekend. Lots of hoops this weekend. You can watch it and enjoy all the beverages and the snacks that you bought at Brewers Outlet. Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. Marcus Towns wins it for Loyola of Chicago.
7 to shoot, 12 to play. Custer still up top. Now he drives, passes to the corner. Towns dribbles and fires a three, and he got it! 6 seconds left. A whistle and a timeout taken by Loyola. But Marcus Towns with a huge three, and that puts Loyola up by four. There's only 6/10 of a second remaining. Richardson gets it in, and the horn sounds. That's it. And Cinderella will continue to dance. Loyola is off to the Elite Eight. They defeat Nevada 69-68 in dramatic fashion.
What a story. They busted Sister Jean's bracket. You know, she is 98. She's as loose as if she were 55 or 60. Analyzes the game beautifully. I love listening to her. And you know what I also love watching? This is a 98-year-old nun who at 98 is in a wheelchair. And those players, 18 to 22 years of age, love her. Wow. That is something else. All right. He's back. Back from Milwaukee. It took days and lots of Starwood points. But Dick Girardi joins us as we're about ready to embark on our second NIT Final Four together.
Yeah, I wrote it down the other night, Steve. I forget what it was. I know we said it on the broadcast, but we're closing on 500.
We're closing on 500, and back to the Garden they go.
Again.
We get to see Mark the Usher again, the security guy.
Absolutely.
Whose daughter is a graduate of Penn State.
And very nice.
Very nice. All right, Dick, this is what we're seeing is something you and I talked about in November that they were capable of, but it took time. Why did it take time, and what do you think made it change?
Well, Steve, look, they were obviously competitive through November and December. I mean, you think about the game in Brooklyn against Texas A&M where they were in the game, they made a nice comeback at the end, had an opportunity. Same thing at NC State, had an opportunity. But they weren't quite ready to win those kind of games. And really a lot of that is just the group as a whole hadn't been together for even 50 games at that point. And once they got really to about 50 or 60 games together, you could really see the change. It came in early January. Then it went back a while when Josh Reeves was unable to play in four games. But really, since the first Ohio State game, they played at a pretty high level almost every game, and I think they're right now playing their best ball of the season as we get to the final week of the season. One way or another, Steve, it's going to be over this time next week.
Right, exactly. Now, when you look at Josh Reaves, they are 11-5 since he got back into the lineup. I think it's pretty obvious to say Tony Carr is the best player. What makes Josh Reaves the most valuable player?
Because he does everything. In baseball, he'd be what is known as a five-tool player. I mean, he's a great defender, as good a defender as in the Big Ten. Whoever the other team's best player, regardless of position, unless he's a center, and he's a solid ball handler. He can run the point for you, and they've been running a lot of those sets lately with Garner and Carr running the wings and trying to get them shots. He's become a better than average three-point shooter, good free throw shooter, tremendous finisher at the rim, really good passer, excellent rebound. I mean, Steve, that's not a whole lot else at basketball. And he's a great team guy. He's got, to me, of all the players on the team, I think he's got the best understanding of the whole game. And he sees things that are hard to see, and I think he really helps the coaching staff. And when he was not there, the difference in the team was obvious in that four-game stretch of Big Ten game.
You and I have also seen a lot of seniors hit the stretch run, and there's a different look in their eye because they understand the stakes. What are you seeing in the eyes of Shep Garner?
Yeah, he's been great, Steve. He's been great for a good month. He's had a phenomenal four-year career. He's going to end up as top five all-time leading scorer when I think he scores 3 points on Tuesday night. He'll pass Pete Lisicki. He's got the single-season record now for most threes in a season. And, yeah, more than anything, he just – and I think that video that I'm sure you've seen of Shep going back to the locker room after the loss to Purdue in the Big Ten told you how much he wanted this. He wanted to win the Big Ten tournament. He wasn't there just to get to the NCAAs. He wanted to win it. This was his league, and this was his best chance. And when it ended, it was so disappointing. And I know he wanted to be in the tournament to maybe finish his career like Taylor Battle did in the NCAA. But you know what? They've made the best of a situation they didn't want a couple of weeks ago, but now they just want one thing, to win the next game and then win the next game. And then there's no more games to play. And there's not many teams every year that get to win their last game, very, very few. Yeah. So it'd be a great thing if they could find a way to beat Mississippi State at either Western Kentucky or Utah on Thursday for the championship.
All right. Tony Carr, of course, facilitates all this. What are the areas of growth you've seen in Tony Carr in the last, let's say, 2 months?
Yeah, I think what Tony, for maybe a couple of weeks, and part of it was when Josh was out, I think he was so wanted to win so badly he was almost trying too hard and was maybe taking some shots that he didn't need to be taking. But I think he's got a much better sense now of a good shot and not a good shot, when to get the ball, who to get it to, where to get it to him. And he's just got a great pace to his game right now. And he's got that look, too. And then, look, he's had it since high school. I mean, he was a double state champion, double Catholic League winner in Philadelphia as a junior and senior at Roman Catholic. So, I mean, he's been on a lot of winning sides, and he's been the reason for it. So, yeah, I just think he's got a better overall sense of everything that's happening on the court. And he, like the other case, maybe he's a little quieter. He might not see the fire. Although if you look closely, you can see it. You can see it Tuesday night in Milwaukee for sure.
Yeah.
He wants it. I mean, he wants to win. And I think the coaching staff a lot. They've maximized Shep's abilities, and that's maybe the unhidden thing in all of what's going on here. But all of these guys have gotten better because they've been coached and they've been willing to be coached. But even some of the sets they were running on Tuesday night, and I haven't watched the tape. In fact, I didn't even tape the game because I didn't really need to go back and see it again. But they ran some stuff they hadn't run all year,
right?
And it was beautifully done, and they ran it because they had a team that was susceptible to certain things, and that's coaching. And they put Tony in a great spot, and obviously Shep, as I said. Lamar Stevens obviously was ridiculous on Tuesday.
Yeah, and that you identified right away that Lamar was going to be the matchup, except for one 3-point shot he settled for. What did you think of that performance?
Yeah, he was tremendous. He he put himself in a position to finish plays because he recognized who was guarding him, where they were coming from. And again, the coaching staff gave Lamar space. They made sure. Did you get a chance to watch the Loyola?
Yeah.
The second half, they ran an offense. I used to coach in rec ball in Baltimore. Took three guys, said stand over by the side of the court. They played 2-on-2 the whole second half.
That's right.
They made their first 13 baskets. Well, right. That's not exactly what Penn State was doing, but it was not totally dissimilar. Is they were just lifting players out of Lamar's way so there could be no help, and just letting him go against players they couldn't guard on. And when there was help, he was able to finish over that anyway because he's gotten so much stronger. And then he made that incredible shot over in front of us with a double team, clock running down, deep left corner. And then, of course, at the end, it was the two back screen, Shep Garner back screen lobs. I think Josh threw one of them. I'm not sure if Tony threw the other one. I don't remember. It was happening so fast. But, yeah, he was great. I knew he'd be good. I couldn't say he would be that, because that was always the matchup that was going to be the good one.
And how important has it been? There's been a calmness about how Patrick Chambers has approached all this. You and I both noticed it. How important has it been, Dick, that there's certain things they've saved? That last play against Ohio State to Josh Reeves was a specific bench call and was something they hadn't run a lot. But it was a specific bench call, and they had Ohio State backing up and didn't call timeout. And then the one they ran against Temple that they worked on and shoot around that entire three or four times, and then when they ran it in the game, they've been saving that one too.
Yeah, you know, Steve, they look like a team that's played 37 games and has had, 100 or so practices. And they're in great shape, and that's testament to the training staff. I mean, these guys, when teams are starting to get tired, they're getting stronger. And you can really see it in the last two games. I think they were athletically superior to Notre Dame and Marquette, but I also thought they were in better shape. And when you get to this stage of March, that's huge.
Yeah.
But it is cool that the staff saved certain things, and they're very confident, I think, in the players' ability to execute it. And they're playing with such a great rhythm and pace, really at both ends right now. I mean, probably the only thing they're going to feel bad about whenever the last game comes is they're not going to get to play some, because they're having so much fun playing right now.
Jamari Wheeler, not scoring points, but he's preventing a lot of points.
He was amazing, and his stat sheet did not tell anything of what he did really in the game on Tuesday night, but he was so disruptive, and he was getting to balls that no human being should be able to get to save them, to steal them, to intercept outlet passes. I mean, there was that one sequence when Penn State's offense finally started to. They were just having issues. I think maybe at the under 8 minute mark in the fourth quarter, but he saved a couple of defensive possessions that didn't get. Marquette could have been a lot closer when they started to make their run. He's a very unique player. Obviously, his summer is going to have to be spent working on his jump shot, working on some aspects of his offensive game. But man, defensively, he's a guy who can help you win games for sure.
What do you think of John Hara and his development along the way?
Yeah, he's been a revelation here down the stretch since Big Mike got hurt. Most teams, when you lose, counting Reggie Lynch, which I mean he really didn't play much, but other than Jackson at Michigan State was the best shot blocker in the Big Ten and leading percentage field goal shooter. I mean, if he got the ball in there, he was going to score. To lose him at the stage they lost in that second last game of the regular season, it's hard to replace. And I think John has done, he's done really well in every aspect of the game. And probably most importantly, Steve, he's played, he hasn't tried to do something he can't do. He knows what right. He can do, and he does it. And I think he's been coached to that. And he's a really strong kid. He sets really good screens. He does a lot of fundamental stuff, again, that helps you win games. And he'd be a really good – you can see it now. It was hard to tell earlier, but you can really see that he's going to be a very good guy for the program for the next 4 years.
No question. You actually, because of your travel situation, you had a chance to take a good long look at Mississippi State in their win at Louisville. What struck you about them?
SEC, amazing athletes,
young guy, not a senior scholarship player on the team, that is just now hitting its peak. They ran Louisville out of the gym. I mean, they didn't just win the game; they slaughtered them. They basically made them quit. And that's Louisville with a lot of guys that have played pretty deep in the NCAA tournament right. A couple of times. So, yeah, they were. They are like Penn State to me, are a team that's absolutely hitting its peak. Now, a lot of things went right for them on Tuesday night that probably wouldn't in a normal game. Like, they made a very high percentage of threes, which really right. isn't their game.
They only hit for the season 32% of their threes.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's obviously a scouting report thing that the Penn State coaches will work on. If you wanted to say, give me two completely different teams to play back-to-back, well, Marquette and Mississippi State would be those teams.
That's right.
But a power team, shot blockers, dunkers, finishers, and typically really get after you on defense, Ben Howland kind of team. And a lot of people, I think, probably didn't even realize Ben has been in Starkville for a couple of years. He took over a program that hadn't done well, and obviously he had great success at Pittsburgh and Northern Arizona before that, took UCLA to a couple of Final Fours. So he has proved it at a lot of levels. And this is a good matchup. It's interesting. Steve, I haven't really been able to sit down and completely analyze it. I think I had a really good sense of the Marquette game before we both did, before the game was ever played.
Right.
This one's a little different because Mississippi State has changed so much even over the last couple of weeks.
Right.
That I'm going to need to think about this one before I get a real sense of it. And I have that whole game taped. I only saw the second half. I want to watch some more of the Louisville-Mississippi State game. But yeah, just think big, strong, powerful, athletic. Penn State may have an edge in some areas in some basketball skill, but and I know Nazir Bostic is going to be back for the game, which is huge because you're going to need some extra bodies, and certainly Naz is going to help in that respect. But yeah, I think it's an interesting matchup. My guess is Penn State will be a slight favorite, probably a 3 or 4 point favorite, but it's not going to be an easy game by any means.
No, not an easy game at all. Dick, the NCAA tournament is the place to be. What is the value, in your opinion, of an NIT?
Yeah, I think look for a team with two seniors who play, and Julie Moore and Shep. It would have been great for them to get in it, but it's great for all the guys who are going to come back and play next season to get a chance to play deep into not only your conference tournament but a postseason tournament. So if they're good enough and have the kind of year everybody hopes next season, then I think they can jump into the NCAA and be ready to go. If you go back through history, there's been a lot of teams that have won or played deep into the NIT that didn't get invited. And I think Patrick was right in our post game. I think they just missed on Penn State, but they're not the only team they missed on the committee. They just, by their own criteria, they didn't have the right resume. But if you had seen them play and understood all of the everything in context, then they were clearly by the end of the season an NCAA team. But I think it helps a lot, though, to your question for next season. Why would this team? I mean, they just look so comfortable now.
Yeah.
Confidence is an elusive thing in life and in sports, but man, once you get it, it is amazing. And you got to have the talent to go with it, or the work ethic, or whatever. They have that. Now they have the confidence. That was the last step to get this thing going in the right direction, and they're doing it all in the postseason without Big Mike Watkins, right. Which I don't know that any of us would have thought possible, but they're doing it.
The heavyweights in terms of name recognition are going Villanova, Kansas, Duke. Craziness, of course, has reigned in other areas of this. What have been your thoughts on how this has played out?
It's been fun. I mean, there's been so many surprising results. And, you know, watching Loyola, what if they won 3 games by 4 points?
Yeah.
And two of them won last-second shots and basically put the game away last night on a shot with 6 seconds left. I mean, it's just that's the fun of it. And I hope the powers that be always keep the schools from the Missouri Valley in it. I'm always worried that there's going to be a money grab at some point, and the big conferences will go, hey, we need all this money. We don't want to share it with Loyola. But, yeah, I mean, how cool is it to see our buddy Bruce Weber with a chance to get to the Final Four? after getting doing a nice job at Illinois and not being able to keep it in Denver. He's got a K-State there, and I mean K-State Loyola, who came up with that Elite Eight game in Atlanta, and his powers are running. I mean, I think Villanova's playing as good as anyone. I'm not surprised Duke is playing this well. You could see it all along. It was just a question of when they were going to figure it out on defense. Kansas again at an Omaha. They had to travel a long way for first to Wichita, then to Omaha. They're alive. And out west, anybody who watched Michigan play in the last 12 games of the regular season in the conference tournament is not surprised they're still playing. What was surprising was how poorly they played in the first two rounds. They were just able to survive it. They look like a team that hadn't played 2 weeks. That's what they look like.
Exactly.
They just weren't ready. Well, they're ready now. They don't have any superstars or even close to it on that team. But, man, they are just playing with such confidence. And it's, as we saw when they came to Penn State, it's Michigan with defense and really good defense.
And we also saw them against Michigan State in New York.
They
locked that team down.
Yep, no, they did. And that's what's kept them alive in the two games that they played in the first round, and two rounds in Wichita. Their offense did not make the trip from New York at all, but their defense kept them alive. I mean, they were just a little better than Montana, and it gave them an opportunity at a miracle in the Houston game. I don't know if you saw our buddy Brendan Quinn's story about Jordan Poole. It's a kid from Milwaukee, but he had one of the great lines ever as Devin Davis, and I'd kind of forgotten he was the kid that was at Indiana. He was shooting two shots for Houston to essentially clinch the game. Their second round game, Rob Gray, the Houston star, walks up to Jordan Poole. He goes, "Hey, Poole, where are you from?" And he goes, "Milwaukee." And Gray says, "Man, a couple minutes, you're going back to Milwaukee." And then, of course, Poole hits the shot that wins the game. I'm not sure where Rob is from, but he went back where he's from. But that's how Brandon started the story. It was great stuff. But that's the kind of neat stuff you see in the tournament. But, you know, what a great play they drew up at the end. And they had a timeout, Steve, which was the key for Michigan. Remember, they missed the free throw.
Yep.
If Michigan doesn't have a timeout, they're launching one from 60 feet.
Right.
But because they had a timeout, they were able to throw a pass, get two dribbles, and a pass and a shot. And how he made it, I don't know that. But you can't make it if you don't get a chance at it. They got a chance, and they're still playing, and they're going to be a pretty solid favorite, I would think, over Florida State on Sunday.
And the Nittany Lions are still playing, too. So
absolutely.
Yeah. Get ready for the world's longest pregame show.
Are we coming on at 9?
No, we're coming on at 8, 8:30.
8:30 for an alleged 9 o'clock game that's not going to happen.
Right. You and I both know it's not going to start till 9:25.
Well, that's all right. We'll have something to say.
Us?
We don't know. We'll just make it up. We'll make it up.
We just did that for the last 25 minutes.
No, that's a good point. We'll replay this, and then we'll go into the regular show.
Perfect. I love it. We'll just replay this, and then... Yeah. I mean, the other stations haven't heard it yet.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, bro. Getting closer to 500 games. Wow.
Yeah, there you go, pal.
Wow. Boy, and somehow you're still sane.
No. I wasn't very sane Tuesday into Wednesday trying to get home.
No, you weren't.
Three flights canceled, one train ride to Chicago. When I get on the train, they tell me, "Oh, the flight you're getting on is canceled." And there's no flights the next day, and I just, as I was telling you, I kept refreshing my phone until I got a flight. I said, BWI, that's me. I can do that.
I was actually looking up flights for you until you told me you got one. So.
Yeah, I know. No, I got one to BWI, jumped on a train, and then I was home. And I looked up, and it was exactly 24 hours after I was supposed to be home, but I'm sure there were a lot of people trying to get east the last couple of days. Well, it was a hard go.
Last I checked, Penn Station was 5 floors underneath the Garden.
There you go. I can get there. I know that.
You better
I know
be
the
there.
Way.
You better be there, pal. All right.
I know the way. That's an easy one. In about 75 minutes on the train.
Got it.
That's
perfect.
Not for me. Not a hard one.
Appreciate
We'll see you next week.
See you. Appreciate everything.
Sounds good. All right, Steve. See you, buddy.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket, Imports, Domestics, Microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. The bags are right there at the register when you check out. And the special between now and Tuesday, Busch and Busch Light 30-pack cans, $15.99. And, of course, the pickle bar is indeed second to none, led by the barrels and the dills. It's all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. And, of course, stock up for the weekend. Go tonight. Stock up tonight. Going to be a lot of hoops this weekend. Not that warm out, so enjoy. And, of course, we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. The Sunbury Motors studio will be mobile next week from Manhattan. And now joining us, the Sultan of SWAT, the straw that stirs the drink. The Prince of Peace.
The pickle-less Prince of Peace.
That's right. Once again, you've been shafted on a bet.
For now. Temporarily.
Temporarily, but we'll solve that in 2 months. Give me 2 months to solve it in terms of transportation, and we'll get it to you by Memorial Day weekend.
Wait till you win one. I'll be driving there.
Well, yeah, because you think you're going to be going to a game.
Yeah.
No offense. I'm just going to the shop.
Well, we could pull this off if Kevin comes down to Madison Square Garden next week. Are you and Claire? No.
Not going to happen.
No, man, you sounded so confident it was going to happen.
Yeah, if business was better. I'm just being honest. If business was better, I could bug out of here for a couple of days, but I got to stay put. So, see, I do a lot of work for GE Power, and they kind of pooped the bed. So, I don't know if you follow the stock market at all. They're not doing well at all, and they're my biggest customer, and we're struggling right now, so I got to kind of stay put. So,
that stinks.
Yeah, it sort of does, but that's life. And
oh, I understand. I understand that.
I was looking forward to this.
As your brother, I'm telling you, it stinks. Because you know how much I love spending time with you.
Yeah, I know. You know how much I love going there. My last two trips there were some of the best trips I ever took, but it wouldn't be right to bug out right now.
No, I just got to thinking I could make a run to Brewers Outlet, and then I could get the pickles to Stefano, and then Manhattan.
What we'll do is, look, Memorial Day weekend,
That's what I'm thinking about getting up there.
Don't worry. I'm only joking about that. You know?
No. But I'm saying we're serious about it.
The next game we go to,
I'm serious about it. I'm saying we're thinking about doing something Memorial Day weekend. I've got to do a speech in Scranton along with James Franklin on the 23rd of May, and I think I might go from there just back. So, you know, some things fell into place.
It's got to be a Brewer's Outlet pickle.
I'm not going to stop at some supermarket.
Breezy's or whatever that place. Oh, Sheets, that's it. Go to Sheets and get a bottle of pickles.
I'm not going to do that. No. My brand loyalty to Brewer's Outlet, who, by the way, has been with us now since day one of this show. Yep. What do you think? I'm going to go over to some bargain basement place and get pickles when I go to Brewers? Come on.
Oh, I know the difference because I had them, and they're delicious.
I know you know the difference. I know. So
yeah, we wouldn't get you the brand of pickles that rhymes with the word plastic. Okay, we wouldn't do that.
I'm sorry. Anybody that uses a stork to sell it, I'm selling it.
Oh boy, these are good. Chewing on a rubber. Oh, that was bad. Okay.
All right.
All right, yeah. Da-da-da-da-da. Hey, how about Calipari? What a class act, huh?
Yeah, I know you're not a big fan of his. I've already taken my shots today. So.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of his at all. And then he has a press conference when he has time to think about what they did. You know, gee, what a shock. You play, 38 games a year, and you know you got to line up and shake the other team's hand. And he takes his team off the court. He taught those young guys real well. No, they'll all be off to the NBA. Good for him.
But my point is, all those other games that they played,
mm-hmm.
How many times did the other team stand there and wait for them?
Exactly.
Over and over and over again. Well, guess what? Now it's your turn.
Yep. He didn't want to stand and watch it. He could have made his team stand there. You will wait here until they're done. And he didn't want to. He's a sore loser. He's not a nice man. And he should not be coaching college basketball. So he didn't teach those kids a thing but to be poor losers. So, no one likes to lose, but it's great when you win. You know, it wasn't fair to the other team. So that's my two cents.
Yeah, and that's and again, as we laid it out, and I talked about the Tennessee with Pat Summitt. They won 3 straight national championships. Finally, that senior team won. Or should be lost in the Sweet 16 in their senior year, turned around, walked off the court. I'm like, well, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Right? That, to me, that is the lowest moment of Pat Summitt's career. Nobody ever talks about it, but I sat there and watched. I thought, what are you doing? Okay, the other 20 games, they'd won 20 consecutive NCAA tournament games, 20, which meant the team they beat just suffered the bitterest of defeats that they could possibly have in their basketball careers. They lost a one-and-done game in the NCAA tournament. Their season's over. And every one of those teams waited for Tennessee. The second Tennessee lost, they turned around, and Pat and her team went to the locker room. Yeah, smooth. That was a good move.
Well, that's why there was always a big rift between, or supposed rift between Geno Auriemma and her. And I always felt it was her. That she couldn't stand the fact that she was not the king of the basketball world anymore, and he was. And it goes, you know better than anyone, that especially in college sports, that the recruiting battle is most of the season, and she was losing recruits to him, and she couldn't handle it. And she had her way for years, and she didn't have her way anymore. And suddenly, oh, Geno is this and Geno is that. Well, no, it was her. And I mean, God rest her soul, the poor woman's gone. But
oh, I know, absolutely.
She used to, in the huddle, she would call it dinger or, oh, checker. And checker meant hurt the other player. In other words, that player's hurting us, is shooting shots. Checker, give her a good shot, hit her. And that, she was a tough coach. They were right. Yeah, she could have coached tough on any level.
Yeah.
But she played to win at any cost. And when they lost, she really struggled dealing with it.
Speaking of coaching on any level, I'll throw this out there now that UConn has a new coach. Well, they didn't have a new coach earlier this week. Do you think there is any inclination that the athletic department would give Gino Auriemma a call and say, hey, how would you like to coach the men's team?
No, not at all.
No.
No, because the women's program is the state of Connecticut. They would not mess with that one bit. The one that I thought they were going to go after was Dingleberry there at Rick Pitino. I'm surprised his name didn't get mentioned more because he wanted the job. That's the rumors I heard, that he really wants to get back into basketball and he'd have taken Connecticut
that
job.
I know he does. I know he wants to get back into it. I do know that.
If you move all of that stuff off to the side, all the rough stuff, the bad stuff that can, you know, paint a bad picture for your program, if you're just talking about on the court achievements and what he has done and accomplished there, his basketball acumen's phenomenal. He's an excellent coach.
Pitino?
Yeah.
Pitino is a basketball genius. I mean, there's no getting around it. It's the other issues that you deal with. Now, Dan Hurley, I think Dan Hurley did a good job with Rhode Island. I saw them play twice in person last year at the Mohegan Sun. And I think he does a good job. This is going to be an interesting step because I felt Rhode Island in the Atlantic 10 was in much better shape than UConn is in the American. UConn in the American is not a, is. I'm not so sure at the moment which one of the two is the more attractive job.
I'm surprised he left Rhode Island.
I was too.
He was building something good there, but it might have been about money. I don't know. He's getting paid pretty good here.
Usually is.
Yeah.
He could have took the Pitt job, and he could have made over $3 million there.
Yeah, that I heard. He took less to go to Connecticut. But I don't know what he was making at Rhode Island.
Well, Pitt
is $2.5 million his first year, and I think he signed a $12 million contract, something like that.
Well, so, that's pretty good reason to go.
Money.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this. You know, they'll ask somebody, you know, how many reasons do you have to make the move? Well, about 12 million of them. So it's now the Pitt job's a scary job right now. You have 9 players and 1 recruit that have all requested their release. You're literally walking into an expansion program because you're going to have to start from square one to try and bring it back. That's how far back Pitt is right now.
Which is a more scarier job, Pitt or Arizona? Because I just don't think I'm surprised that Sean Miller's still there.
Okay. What is a scary job? Pitt's a scarier job because you're literally starting from zero.
I was shocked when I saw Sean Miller on the court. I thought he was gone.
He's fighting it.
Yeah.
Now, normally two words that scare most people are wiretap. Okay. But he's fighting and saying, no, that's not. So he wants to fight, he fights. But what's the scarier job? Pitt's the scarier job because they don't have any players right now. It's not like you're walking in and you're inheriting a group of players. Yeah, they struggled. Yeah, they're young, whatever. But at least I've got something to start with and work with and recruit around. But you're walking into a program at Pitt that at the moment doesn't have any players.
What happened?
And what happened after two years?
They were a powerhouse. How come they're so weak now?
All right, I'll take you through it. Now, I know Kevin Stallings pretty well because Kevin's son Jacob was the catcher for the State College Spikes a few years ago, and Jacob now is with the Pirates.
Yeah.
And so Kevin spent a lot of time up here. And when I was doing the, you know, and of course, you know, I do the State College Spikes games on the radio, and Kevin would come up once in a while, and we'd do a few innings together. So what I'm about to say is about somebody I personally like. Okay.
Yep.
In fact, I saw both Kevin and Jacob in Brooklyn when they did the tournament. This is what happened to Kevin at Pitt. He went to Pitt, and they had four senior starters last year. So he inherited four senior starters. And he did well enough with them. But the problem was is that after that, the cupboard was going to be bare, which meant there was going to have to be a starting over again. This goes back to the previous Pitt regime that looked at Jamie Dixon, and I don't know whether it was personal within the Pitt regime or whether it was the Golden Panthers saying, hey, the only thing this guy can do is get us to the Sweet 16. He can't get us past the Sweet 16. That was always the point about Jamie Dixon. Okay, I'd like to pull that esteemed group aside tonight and ask them how they feel about the Sweet 16. Looks pretty good now, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, again, you got to stop. You got to know who you are, and a lot of programs do not know who they are, and you've also got to understand what is really good for your program, because you can go past it once in a while too, and every once in a while fall a little bit short. But who are you? And everyone seems to think that they're a Final Four team. Well, you aren't. And Pitt's one of those teams. They aren't unless they get lucky and get a nice little run going together. But they were a perennial NCAA team that could get through the first weekend. That's what they had, and they gave up on it. So now you got to hire somebody, and they hire Kevin. Kevin Stallings takes over, four senior starters, but again, not a lot to work with around it. Those four guys then leave. Well, now he's got to start all over again, and let's be honest about it, Pitt was not a good basketball team this year. I mean, at one point, Penn State led them by 42 points in the second half at Brooklyn, right? Not a good team. So, but also young, a lot of freshmen, but they just weren't ready to do anything. Didn't win a game in the ACC. So, new athletic director. They decide, look, she wants to make her own choice. That's her prerogative. She cuts ties with Kevin. And now you have nine players saying, I want my release, including their prize recruit. I want my release. Wow. I want out. And so whomever takes over that program is going to have to literally start from scratch with an expansion team. As for Arizona, say Sean Miller's not there. Whomever comes in is going to have all this talent sitting there. They're not going to transfer out. I mean, two of them have already opted for the NBA. Ayton and Trier have both opted for the NBA draft, and they're both going. Now, they may lose more players if Sean Miller were not retained, but there's no comparison where the two programs are.
Hmm. Wow.
Yeah, I just don't see Arizona surviving with him staying there. I mean, the longer he stays there, that elephant in the room just continues to get heavier and heavier. Just because of the wiretaps and FBI thrown into the mix. And that stuff, that's heady stuff.
Again, it's going to depend on how they want to do it and how they want to approach it.
How do you guys feel about the FBI getting involved?
Well, the FBI is involved, let's say,
How do you feel about it? I don't care why they're involved. This is where I'm going. They couldn't get a kid who was on their radar down in Florida. And they're more concerned about some stupid basketball thing at $100,000 than some kid who's crazy, who's buying an assault rifle, who everybody told him he's crazy, and they didn't do anything about it. And we're going to listen to they wiretapped the college coach's phone.
Let me explain quickly how this happened. There was a guy in Pittsburgh who was actually being investigated with his dealings with the Securities and Exchange Commission. And so that's what the entire investigation was about. It had nothing to do with basketball. So whatever they had on him, I guess they had him. And, of course, the usual question comes up as, well, is there anything you can give to us? If you do, maybe it'll reduce sentencing. You know what I mean? He said, well, I've got this thing about, you know, basketball payments and so forth along the way. I went, really? And that's how they got involved with it, because he's the one that wore the wiretap. He's the one that wore the wire, and the original case had zero to do with basketball. He offered it up.
Hmm.
That's how they got involved in it. Then everything else that you've read has zero to do with the case. It's just what they've found out in discovery. All the things you're seeing are NCAA violations, but they are not against the law. You know, Yahoo Sports, I mean, Pat Forty and Pete Thamel have done a great job reporting on this. And they've also had some really good sourcing on it. But all the stuff that you read, while being embarrassing for college basketball, it's not illegal.
Right.
Now, the cases they're trying to build against the apparel company, the executive in the apparel company, from the four assistant basketball coaches and a couple of others, yeah, they built whatever case against them for fraud and bank fraud and things like that, bribery. You know, I mean, that's what they've been doing. But the stuff they've released where everybody goes, whoa, wow, whoa, that's not against the law, but it is an NCAA violation.
You think he can beat it?
I don't know. Because obviously I have no clue what is on that wiretap and the spear with which it was mentioned, so I don't know.
Well, he had a lot of spear when the story came down a few weeks ago. He had a lot of spirit and fight in his voice, and was it sounded like a guy who was going to go to bed with a clear conscience that night. But I'm thinking, okay, but but like you said, we're dealing with wiretaps and FBI, and it's one story's right, one story's wrong.
Yeah, again, two words that should scare anybody. Wire tap. Okay, that guy. Yeah. Hey, you have a great weekend, and it really, I mean, I understand what you're doing, but no, just so you know, your brother feels it stinks, and you're not going.
I'll be texting you, and gosh, I hope you win, and congratulations, and boy, what a great defensive team.
Yeah. They have been. They're actually very
well coached. Very well coached. So.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.